You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Four Southeast Wisconsin colleges have made an ambitious pledge to close racial and income-based graduation gaps within the next 10 years. UWM, MATC, UW Parkside, and Carthage College signed on to an initiative called Moonshot for Equity with DC-based education consultant EAB. It involves reimagining how colleges support students in an effort to eliminate equity gaps. It's likely to be an uphill battle. Milwaukee area colleges have graduation gaps as large as 20 or 30 points between white students and their Black and Hispanic peers. But there's proof that it's possible. Georgia State University has eliminated racial and economic graduation disparities over the past several years. So, how did they do it? WUWM education reporter Emily Files posed that question to Tim Rennick, who's overseeing the university's student success efforts. He began by talking about how Georgia State became so focused on student retention and graduation.
I think there were several factors that led to us really putting an emphasis on this. One, Georgia State was going through demographic changes. So when I arrived at Georgia State as a junior faculty member right out of my graduate program, Georgia State was a majority white institution. Over 70% of the student body was white. Today, Georgia State's student body is 75% non-white. So these are demographic changes that are going on to some degree across the United States, but especially true of Georgia and the city of Atlanta. And so one reason we were motivated to change is that, you know, to put it simply, we were increasingly enrolling the students that at the time we were least effective in graduating, right? That's not a very good proposition over the long haul, is to, you know, enroll more and more students of color and more low-income students, and those are the students who really struggle at your institution. So what we wanted to do is find a way to be much better at supporting these students. And I think if you ask why we wanted to do that, there are both moral and practical reasons. My field is religious ethics, and I have taught in the classroom at Georgia State for over 20 years before I ever began this work in student success. We have an obligation to the students and their families who kind of entrust their sons and daughters to our care to deliver on the promises. And you know, when graduation rates are hovering around 30% and white students are twice as likely to complete a degree as Black students are, that's not delivering on the promise. So we have a moral obligation to do better. But there's also a practical side of this, that the number of high school graduates nationally in places like Georgia, but even more so in states like Indiana, those number of graduates are not increasing, right? The number of high school graduates is going down. And so if we don't do a better job of holding on to the students we already enroll, we're going to be in a very difficult circumstance financially, from an enrollment perspective, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So how did you do it? Walk me through the different changes you made.
Well, I think the simplest thing to say is we began to use data to put the mirror on ourselves and understand our own failings. That's not easy for any institution to do, higher education institutions included. But we began to use data to not point fingers at others, to say, wouldn't we be better if K through 12 in Georgia produced, you know, academically more qualified students, or wouldn't we be better if the state of Georgia gave us more appropriations, but rather to say, let's understand what we're doing that's tripping up students, how we admit students, how we advise them, how we distribute financial aid, how we register them. These are things that are in our domain. So if we can find ways in which those processes are contributing to the students who are dropping and flunking out of Georgia State, then that's a promising prospect, because those are things we might be able to change. What Georgia State did that transformed our outcomes and eliminated equity gaps was not create a whole series of boutique programs, but to find things we weren't doing well, find better alternatives, and then scale those alternatives across the whole student body. The way they're being supported is different now than they were just a few years ago.
One of the things that Georgia State has done is in the advising realm and using predictive analytics to find when students might be at risk of dropping out. Tell me about how that system works.
Yeah, back in 2011, This is before we made the changes. We were losing 5,700 students every year to college dropout. They would be enrolled one semester and not the next. What was troubling is that in most cases, they were qualified to come back and continue their degrees. They were just not electing to do so. So we wanted to find out what was happening to all these students. Why were they, you know, enrolled, qualified, and then walking away from the university without getting a degree? 5,700 students a year. And so this is when we first worked with EAB. We did a big data project. We looked at 10 years of our data, 2.5 million grades from Georgia State students, 140,000 student records. The point of the project was really simple. Could we find anything in the historical data to allow us to understand what kind of things students are doing before they drop out? What are the early warning signs? We were trying to find any recurring behaviors that correlated in a statistically significant way to students dropping or flunking out of Georgia State. We thought maybe we'd find a few dozen. The end of that 6-month project, we had found 800. And so what we started doing in August 2012, and we've been doing it every single night since then, is as we update all our data systems every evening, we're looking for any one of those 800 behaviors. If one's identified, then the very next morning, the advisor assigned to that student gets an alert that says, you know, over the last 24 hours, one of your students encountered a problem. They took a quiz and performed really poorly on it. They didn't log on to their online class. They got a grade in a prerequisite course that indicates that they're not likely to succeed at the next level. They registered for a class, but it's not the class they need to register for this semester, and it's not in the right order. Those sound like simple things, but the reality is at a big university like Georgia State, 50,000 students, these sorts of things were going on every day by the hundreds, and nobody was paying any attention. Now we're paying attention. So somebody's going to tell a student they registered for the wrong class, or if they underperformed in a quiz, somebody's going to tell the student, do you know there's tutoring available, or you can go to faculty office hours. We do this not by the hundreds or the thousands, but by literally the hundreds of thousands. So over the last 12 months, we've had about 150,000 instances of advisors reaching out to students based upon alerts coming out of this platform. And we've seen transformative differences. I will point out, none of this work is targeted by race, ethnicity, or income level. But I will say, since we started systematically looking at these problems, graduation rates have gone up across the board. Our white students are graduating at higher rates. Our high upper income students are graduating at higher rates. But not surprisingly, the biggest gains from this system have been for students who come from so-called underserved backgrounds. It's students who don't have parents or brothers and sisters who've gone to college before, who don't have this kind of invisible support system, that benefit the most when we start supporting students in the way we always should have. We should have never assumed that students know how to navigate this big bureaucracy that is college. And by helping students do so, we've disproportionately helped the students who in the past were struggling the most. And that's been part of the formula for eliminating equity gaps.
Right. So it's recognizing that college is a very complex system to navigate. And it can also be really overwhelming for students, you know, to take on these higher level classes and maybe juggling a job and other responsibilities. So what are some of the red flags that would come up? I mean, grades probably are a big one, but what are some other ones that people might not think of that flag that the student might need some assistance?
A lot of the red flags are just commonsensical. If a student is dropping or withdrawing from a course in the middle of the semester, talk about an early alert of, you know, a problem. The student is raising their hand. They paid for the course. They're enrolled in it. Why are they dropping it? Reach out to that student immediately. Find out right now, because it may be the student is going through a financial crisis or a personal issue, and they need other supports, or this problem is going to get much, much worse. It is looking at the first grade, for instance, a student gets in his or her major. We found that that grade is highly correlative to their chances of graduating on time. Let's get that help now rather than sitting back passively like we've done for generations in higher education. I'll mention one other warning sign, really a simple one, but students have trouble picking the right major. Georgia State brags about the fact that we have 80-something different undergraduate majors that we offer, But that's overwhelming for students. And if they pick the wrong major and go too far down a particular pathway, that can set them up for dropping out. A low-income student, for instance, can't afford to bounce between different majors because every time they change major, they create added time to degree. And they risk their aid, their financial support running out before they finish a degree program. So one of the reasons why the whole Milwaukee area schools are thinking about these guided pathways and why I think this is really important is giving students as they first enter college the opportunity to make a more informed decision about the academic field they will pursue.
Can you talk a little bit more about the guided pathways? So does this involve grouping similar majors together so that there's less chance of losing credits if a student switches majors?
It does involve that, Emily, yeah. The guided pathways is really an outgrowth of decision-making science. Human beings get overwhelmed with large choices. There's this study that was actually done in grocery stores that found you could offer free samples of jelly. If you gave people three choices, do you want to sample one of these threes? You got a lot of people saying, yeah, I'd love to sample one. If you had 27 jars in front of them, they'd just be so overwhelmed, they wouldn't even take the time to sample anything. And, you know, in a broader and obviously more serious sense, that's just the kind of challenge we give to a lot of college students. They come in, we say, oh, we've got thousands of courses, we've got 100 different majors, good luck in choosing. And it can be stifling and it can be frightening and it can lead to the students getting off path. So what the guided pathways do is limit the choices initially. What we develop, the technical term is meta majors, but instead of having students choose among 85 different majors, we make the choices more limited. We say, do you want to go into business? Do you want to go into the arts? Do you want to go into STEM fields, sciences and math and so forth? And they can begin to narrow the choices down. You put the students together in their first semester in classes that support their broader interest, and you use that first semester to help explain to them in greater detail what the subsequent choices will be. So now that we know you're interested in business, let's just take some time over the next 6 months to talk about the difference between marketing and finance and risk management and so forth. And what we found at Georgia State by this guided pathway, by changing the structure of the way we onboard students, is we've greatly reduced the number of students changing majors after their first year by over a third. And we've greatly reduced the average time to degree. The average bachelor's student at Georgia State is taking over a half a semester less time to complete all their degree requirements than they were 6 or 7 years ago.
That makes a lot of sense. It's just crazy that we ask 18-year-olds to decide what they want to do for the rest of their lives.
And that we put so much at stake for that decision. So what we see via the data is asking an 18-year-old, especially a first-generation low-income student, to choose among 85 different undergraduate majors sets them on a path for failure, at least a large number of them. And that's why I'm so supportive of this whole effort as a community for Milwaukee area post-secondary schools to get together and say, how can we serve the students better? It's not rocket science. It's not a mystery. A lot of what Georgia State has been doing is just common sense. But it's time we deliver common sense at scale to the students who entrust their future to us.
You mentioned that Georgia State has lost some state funding in recent years, and that's an issue that Wisconsin schools are dealing with too, just not having enough funding to support what they're currently doing, let alone adding new staff or programs. So how has Georgia State been able to afford all of these initiatives, you know, including, I'm sure, a very large staff of advisors?
Yeah, and you're exactly right. The biggest expense we've had over the last 10 years has been hiring up more advisors to be the go-betweens, to take the data and relay it to the students in a timely fashion and offer them support and advice. That's been critical. The answer to how we can afford to do so are the initiatives themselves. So Georgia State does not have a large endowment. We do not have high tuition fees. What we've been able to do, though, is produce more revenues from holding on to students who were in the past walking away. This is kind of a crude calculus, but it's actually true that for every 1 point that we increase the progression or retention rates of Georgia State students. So every 1% more students we hold on to any given year because they don't drop out, that's worth about $3.3 million in additional tuition and fee revenues. Just 1 point. Well, Georgia State hasn't improved our success rates with our students by 1 point over the last decade. We've improved them by 23 percentage points. So you're talking about $60, $70, $80 million of additional revenue that in the past was walking away from Georgia State. And this is the model that will work going forward. The demographics, especially in the Midwest and the Northeast, look very bleak over the next 15 or so years. And places like Wisconsin are not going to be producing more and more high school graduates ready to enroll. Probably, you know, Madison will have no problem and a couple other campuses will do just fine. But a lot of other campuses are really going to be struggling if they don't hold on to the students they already enroll. And the best way to do so is support these students. They all have raised their hand saying they want a college degree. They've committed by coming to your campus saying, please help me, and we're not doing enough to make sure that they can follow through.
Tim Renick oversees student success programs at Georgia State University. He spoke with WUWM's education reporter, Emily Files.